Jason.
Hello.
Hey, man. Hey. How are you doing?
Hey, how's it going, man?
It's going good. Good. How you doing over there? Have the storms passed you by?
We didn't get any of it.
That's good.
Yeah, that was, we were thinking we were going to get hit pretty good, and then they just didn't come this way.
Yeah, I lived in Atlanta. I don't know if you know this. I lived in Atlanta for 4 years. I went to college down there at Emory.
Oh.
What brought you down there?
I got married.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your wife was originally from there?
Well, I actually met my wife in high school, and she's a couple years older than me. And then she graduated, and she moved down here, and I didn't talk to her for 20 years. And then through the magic of Facebook.
There you go, man. Facebook can be good for stuff, too. Social media. It's it's not all the awful stuff you hear in the news.
It's not. It used to be better, I think. I'm on Facebook maybe twice a week now, but I can't really do it all the time.
Well, it brought us together.
It did.
As well as you and your wife, so.
Yeah. So, it's not all bad.
So, what high school did you go to?
I went to Oakton.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
We've had a couple guys on from Oakton, but not too many. They had Charlie Post went to Oakton, and Billups Allen went there for a little while also.
Yeah, I know them both pretty well.
Nice. So they were a little bit ahead of you, right?
Yeah. Well, I first met Charlie when he was going to Oakton, and I was probably in eighth grade, maybe. Because he was friends with my sister. So I met him then, and I also met at that time a guy who was in Ugly for a little bit, this guy Dave. He was friends with my sister also. And Bill didn't, I don't think Bill went there all that long. I remember him there, but I don't remember him being there a lot.
I think just his senior year or something like that.
Yeah, something. Yeah, he wasn't there very long. But I knew Bill better outside of Oakton, you know, later on down the road when we were, you know, doing all the band stuff.
Yeah, Bill was heavily involved in music around that area.
Yeah, he, for a while there, he was doing, well, he put out a 7-inch for us. He had started up this little label. It was called Victrola then. And I think he had to change the name because it was Victrola. And, you know, RCA infringements and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he put out a record for us, and he put out Uglies. He put out Round Boy Laughing, I think. And he did a band from Richmond called Inertia. They were really, really good. And he also did, that is Dillinger, I think, who I think the drummer for that band played in Shoutbus with him. But I was kind of out of the picture at that point, so.
So when you were younger, you know, you said you had an older sister and you said you kind of had heard of these guys. Were you aware that they had a band, that they were playing music? Were you aware of, you know, local music in the area?
I knew Charlie played, but he hadn't done Ugly or anything like that. This was way before that. But I knew he played. I didn't know about anybody else. And I didn't really know much about, you know, any of the music scene until I got to high school. And that's when, you know, especially like since this is Jams for Man, I didn't learn about any of the rest in bands until I got to high school, because like most of my high school actually came from like Fox Mill and Franklin Farms. And so when I met guys from there and started skating with those guys, you know, that's when, you know, they'd be like, hey, you should hear this band Transvillience or whatever, or, you know, Hostile Environment or whatever. And that's how I heard about all those guys.
And so did you get a chance to check out any of the early Jam for Man shows before your band was involved?
I know I went to two besides the one we played. I know I saw Avail with their first singer.
Brian Stewart.
Yeah. I know I saw them play there with him. And I'm pretty sure I saw Avail play there again when Tim started singing.
What were your impressions of Avail at that point?
They had this song, Upward Grind, and they played that song, and I was like, holy shit, what, you know, like what, guys from the suburbs in Virginia don't play music like this, you know, that shit doesn't happen, but there it was, you know, and.
Were you playing music at that point? Did you?
I had started playing guitar, but, you know, I didn't really know anything. I was just kind of goofing around.
What kind of guitar did you have?
I don't remember because I've always had, like, cheap pawn shop guitars. It wasn't until Lugnut was in full swing that I actually bought an SG. And that was my first, like, real guitar, I guess. But the rest of them were all, like, Japanese pawn shop guitars, you know?
Yeah, I do. My first guitar was a Global.
So nice.
So I know.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, there's also kind of magic in those instruments because you never really know how they're going to sound. So, and sometimes it's a blessing.
Well, this one sounded awful, but, I mean, I wrote a lot of early songs on it, so I feel like there was some magic in that guitar.
Yeah. Yeah, my whole philosophy is that, like, I don't know, maybe it's Zen or whatever, but it's the guitar picks me, you know? I don't, like, I've the last two guitars I bought, it was a Squire Telecaster I bought about 15 years ago. And I took one look at it and said, I'll take it. And I had played that for 15 years. And then just recently, I'd been a music store I go to. Every time I walked in, they had this Epiphone Wildcat, which is kind of like a Gretsch copy, you know, semi-hollow body with a Bigsby and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I walked in, I stared at it. And it sat up there on the wall for like 2 years. And I finally was just like, I sent my wife a text and I said, would you be mad if I bought a guitar, you know? And she said, no, go for it. And so I said, you know what, I'm just going to do it. Because I'd been staring at it for so long and never even played it.
Yep. It was just meant to be.
It was meant to be. And I love it. I can't put the thing down now.
The wand chooses the wizard.
That's it.
So you were going, you had gone to these shows, you were playing guitar,
mm-hmm.
you're going to Oakden. How does the band Lugnut start?
Well, I had been playing with Brian Ballard, who was a bass player. We had been playing for a couple of years together, and I've gotten out of a band with these two guys who moved here from Montana. We just got done playing with them, and I don't really quite know how it came together. I think Dave Schwartz, who's also the other guitarist for Lugnut when we started, him and Clay, who was our first drummer, I think they were jamming together. And, you know, we were all friends. We all skated together. We all hung out together. And so it was just kind of like, hey, you want to come over and jam? You know, we got some songs. And me and Brian were like, yeah, cool, we got some songs too. And so we just, you know, we got together and we got our buddy Mark to come over and screen for us, and it just kind of took off, you know.
What did taking off look like?
It looked pretty good, I thought, you know, because we came into it with some originals, and we all were listening to pretty much the same stuff. So we were like, hey, you know, let's try to do this cover, and let's try to do this cover. And so we flushed out some songs fairly quickly, and we started Lugnut, I think, in the spring, like late winter, early spring, and we played our first show in like May of 91 when we started. So it took off pretty good.
Where was your first show at?
Our first show was at DC Space, which was cool.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And you know, so I get that on the belt, I get to notch that one off, you know.
Hell yeah.
Play. So, you know, and
had you been to shows at I assume you'd been to shows at DC Space before that.
I think I'd only gone to one. I think I know Mark and I went and saw Hole.
And this is, like, before, you know, before they were well-known?
Yeah, we saw Hole, it must have been, like, 1990. It was for, I forget what the record was called, but...
That's way before I remember hearing about them.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty early. It was, they had a, yeah... I mean, it was early. I remember when they got on stage and they were, you know, hooking everything up and everything. And over the loudspeaker, over the, you know, the club speakers, they were playing Nirvana. And I remember Courtney said something like, oh, Kurt, or something like that. We were like, you know, Mark and I, you know, we all knew who Nirvana was at that point. And, because we had heard Bleach, you know, and it was a great fucking record. And we were all like, you don't fucking know Kurt Cobain. Fuck you, you know. Yeah, little did we know.
You said you were playing some covers early on. What were the covers that you played? What were like the bands that were most influential to you guys at that point?
At that point, I remember Prong being a big influence then. I think we covered Prong. We covered The Drunk Engines. We covered She's Got a Gun by The Drunk Engines, which were probably the best skate rock band ever.
What's wrong? Hot wind, cold night, demon light is shining bright. I look at you. I looked at her hand, she got so good. I look at you. I can feel, I can touch, I can see, I can kill. I'm not a god, I'm a man. Listen, oh, why don't you understand that I speak of joy, speak of hunger, speak of sadness, I speak of pain, I speak of the wasted times of worry. Can you remember, remember our pain? I look, hey, yo, I look at her hand, she got the gun.
And we did Disaster Blaster from White Zombie. And I think that was it at that time.
This is not stuff that was playing on the radio.
No.
So where were you guys finding this music?
Wherever, really. I remember I used to go, like, I went to, before Convergence was in Fairfax, they had a location above Rolls Music in Falls Church.
Huh, and, I don't remember that.
Yeah, and, I bought a couple records there. Surprisingly, I bought, COC's Animosity at Fair Oaks Mall. Which, you know, odd enough, but
just from the cover.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's got the Pusshead cover on it and it's
yeah.
like one of the most brutal albums ever. I love that record. And, and so, yeah, I bought that and, a lot of stuff that I was hearing, you know, was from like people circulating tapes, you know, like I'd get the COC record and I'd make a tape of it and give it to a buddy who, you know, who had bought like the first Sam Hain record, and he would copy that and give it to me. And that's how I remember getting a lot of stuff.
Yep, me too.
You know, just some friends. Yeah, and like my wife's sister, she was, I think she was living in San Francisco at the time, but she's like, they're all originally from Iowa. And so she was really into, like, you know, hardcore out in San Francisco and in the Iowa scene. And I remember back then, you know, my wife and I were just friends, and I had given me, like, my first tape of Scream, Banging the Drum, which is a great record. So, you know, yeah, that's how.
And that was with Dave Grohl?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't hear the other Scream stuff till after I had heard that record. Because they had, I think, just played Cedar Crest. I know they played Cedar Crest, but I think it was around that time. And I couldn't go to the show. I don't really know how it ties in together, but I remember it was all around that time. And it was, and Dave Grohl was in the band then.
Your parents wouldn't let you?
No, my parents let me do a lot of stuff. I don't remember why I couldn't go. I saw Gwar there at Cedar Crest.
Rad.
Yeah, dude, you have no idea, man. It was like they were on one side of, you know, one side of the flat up top playing, and then, you know, there were people all on the other side of the ramp, and the pit was down on the flat at the bottom of the transition, you know, and big fight broke out, and the cops came, and it was awesome.
What did Gwar look like up on stage?
Pretty good, man. I mean, they're kind of cartoonish now, you know. I still love them, but they're kind of cartoonish. But back then, like, they kind of, you know, they were kind of a little scary looking, really, you know. And then
I imagine you'd never seen anything that looked like that before.
Yeah, no, there was nothing. There still really is nothing like Gwar. You know?
Yeah, it's sort of like the, you know, the evolution of Kiss or Alice Cooper,
mm-hmm.
or any of that stuff, like, you know, taken to the nth degree.
Yeah, and they had, like, set up this mock wrestling ring, and they were, like, you know, wrestling, like, I think it was, like, an irradiated crab or something. You know? I mean... And it's at, like, the premier, you know, ramp on the East Coast, which is right up the street, and, you know, it was cool.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really great. So, getting back to Lugnut,
mm-hmm.
When you played at DC Space, like, what song or songs were the crowd reacting to the most?
I don't remember. The crowds didn't really react to us. I don't ever remember us being very popular, but, you know, I mean, but it was all fun. Like, that was our first, you know, that was our first show. So, like, a lot of our friends came. So it was just kind of a cool get together.
Even in Oakton, people didn't react?
Not that I remember, honestly. You know. Because you got to understand, we were all doing it, you know, like Lugnut wasn't the only band going on at that time in our circle, because, you know, we knew people from Chantilly and South Lakes, and, you know, like two of the Sun Monkeys went to Oakton at that time, and there was a band called Springhead, I believe, and this guy, a friend of ours, Stuart Lynn Cook, was in that band, and then Tom Newich played guitar in that band, and he went to Oakton. So.
Keep going. Who else? Who else was, like, on the scene? What other bands?
I remember them. I remember a friend of mine, Derek, who now goes by D-Wreck. He's a glass artist in your neck of the woods out in L.A. He had a band called Gore Galore, and they were like straight metal. It was a good name. Yeah, I saw them play once, and you know they were good. He's a totally awesome metal guitarist now. And then our buddy Rich Wood, he had a band for a while. I don't remember their name. But yeah, he had a band. So at one point, there was like six bands going on.
All from Oakton.
Well, they all had people from Oakton in them.
Oakton, the school, had a pretty decent music program itself, right?
As far as like marching band and stuff, yeah. I know.
But like, didn't you have like an actual guitar class there?
Not that I remember.
No?
No. We had a really great photography program and a really great art program. But I don't remember any like jazz labs or anything like that.
Okay, because we had that at South Lake. Like, we had jazz band. Back then, there was, like, a guitar lab.
Really?
Yeah.
I wish we had it. I would have taken it.
Yeah. The school was much more, like, supportive of the arts. I mean, I remember also, like, they would allow students to paint murals on the walls of the school. So,
really?
Like... Yeah, so like Ari Kirschenbaum, who was in the Sun Monkeys,
mm-hmm.
painted a mural on the school. You know, that is the most psychedelic, like craziest thing you've ever seen, and it was amazing.
That's
awesome. It was called Mr. Mercurial in Splooge Land. And I remember watching him like, you know, like skipping class just to watch him paint.
Wow.
And then just being able to walk past that thing like every day. Now South Lakes was a jail, you know, it had no windows, and you know, they had narcs walking around to keep people inside and on the ground.
Yeah.
And you know, it was a repressive place to go to school. But at the same time, there was a certain amount of support for the arts.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, we had good photography and good art, but we didn't get to paint murals on the wall.
Yeah. My buddy Mike Tarr, who I was in my first band with, he went to Oakton, and he took photography class there, and it's still like an amazing photographer living
That's
in
awesome.
Ethiopia. And I remember the stuff that he would do there was just really great.
Yeah.
The photography at Oakton. And we used to go also in the morning sometimes. You guys started earlier than us. And Mike
really?
didn't have a car. Yeah. You guys would start like 15, 20 minutes earlier than South Lake. So I would go and drop him off at Oaken, and that guy, Old Jack, you remember
mm-hmm.
Old Jack?
Yeah.
So Old Jack would do planetarium shows.
Yeah.
There at Oaken on, like, Fridays.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we would go in early. I would catch a planetarium show. He would also lay out, like, donut holes and coffee, show up late to my class, but with, like, a coffee for my teacher and donuts, like, for several of my fellow students and the teacher.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
So I would kind of get away with a little bit showing up late by doing that.
That's awesome.
So those are my memories of Oakton. So all my memories of Oakton are really positive.
Yeah, I mean, I was a horrible student, but I met some of the coolest people, and I still think they're some of the coolest people. So, you know.
So speaking of the coolest people, you were telling me who was in the band
mm-hmm.
Originally. What became sort of the regular lineup of Lugnut?
Well, what happened was is we graduated and our other guitarist, Dave, he went to college and the rest of us didn't. And, you know, we had kind of called it quits, but then, I don't know, it didn't last long. So we were like, hey, let's just keep playing. We'll just do it without Dave, you know. And so we kept playing and and that was with me and Brian and Mark and Clay. And we recorded our first 7-inch with that lineup. Played some shows, you know, like we played at Sanctuary Theater, which was a church downtown. We opened for Unrest, which was odd because we were nothing like them, you know, but it was a gig, so it was cool for me, you know. And we did that for a while, and then we played a show in Massachusetts, and Clay met the woman who he would eventually marry, and he kind of left the band at that point. And so through another girl at Oakton, we met this guy, Zach, who was fresh from California, and he joined the band. And he actually plays drums on those files I sent you. And so he was in the band for, I don't know, maybe 6 months, 7 months. And we recorded our first cassette, which is Curb Bomb, and that's what I sent you. And we played, you know, we played wherever with him. I remember we played, there was a coffee shop in Georgetown that we played a couple times with him there. And like I said, we recorded with him. And we recorded that at Inner Ear. And then he had to move back to California.
Oh, don't skip over recording at Inner Ear.
It's not much to talk about, really. I guess it's iconic, but it was, we didn't do it because everybody had recorded, you know, all the Discord people had recorded there. We went there because they used to have Midnight Madness and studio time was like half off. So instead of being like $80 an hour, it was $40, and we could afford it. So we were like, let's book Midnight Madness. And, you know, we'd go in at, you know, we'd get there at like 6 p.m. and hang out for a bit, and then we you know, mic everything up and recorded, like, you know, till whenever in the morning.
Did Don actually record your album, or was it one of the other engineers?
It was one of the other engineers. It was a girl whose name I can't remember, but, yeah. I mean, it was cool in the respect that when you walk in there and you, like, see first pressings of, like, Out of Step or, like, the first pressing of a Bad Brains record and you're like, holy shit, you know? That's kind of cool. And, I mean, it's a good studio, so, you know. But I wasn't that awestruck, you know?
You're too cool for inner ear, huh, Nathan?
I don't know about too cool. Well, you see, well, check this out. Because the guy we recorded our first 7-inch with is this guy, Jeff. And
Jeff Turner?
Jeff Giuliano.
Okay.
And we recorded our first 7-inch with him. We recorded our second 7-inch with him. And we recorded what would have been our second full length that was going to be on Bill's label, but we broke up. So we recorded mostly with him. And he actually now is like a big time audio engineer, you know, like he's made it big. He does a lot of stuff for Nashville and, you know, so he's done well, but we used him mostly because we liked him and he was friends with Brian's brother, who is also a musician and, you know.
Well, in terms of curb stomp,
yeah.
What were your favorite songs what was your favorite song in terms of how it sounded and how it made your guitar sound?
I just listened to them yesterday. So probably Goon, the song Goon, or 8274. We played 8274 up until the very end. That was a staple in the set list.
What does 8274 mean?
It's the count. So, like, when the song starts and it goes down, it does that 8 times, then it does it 2, 8, 2, 7, 4. It does it that many times.
Huh.
And that's just where it came from.
That's cool. It's funny how bands, like, come up with stuff early on, you know, in terms of naming their songs.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, how you remember them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the one that goes 8, 2, 7, 4, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And like, we were huge Melvins fans, you know, and Big Helmet fans, too. And they did a lot of weird time stuff. And so we were trying to, like, you know, do that. And that's how that came about, you know.
Well, I'd be remiss. You brought up Goon. I'd be remiss, because I was listening to it yesterday, if we didn't mention sort of the lyrics of Goon and how much it made me think of the political situation we're kind of going through right now, you know, with the Supreme Court thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how political you are. But in, you know, in hearing about this rape case, you know, attempted rape thing with where the potential Supreme Court justice is being accused of that, and
right.
the lyrics just seem to, you know, be about date rape and, you know, your band commenting on it.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, Mark wrote the lyrics, you know, Mark was always trying to, he wrote good stuff like that, you know, like we had another song called, Take a Polaroid Picture of God. And it was just about like war, you know, like how people think their gods are much better than another god. And Mark's kind of going, well, take a picture of them when you get there. You know what I mean? So. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, Mark definitely wrote some, you know, thought-provoking lyrics, I guess you could say.
He's putting his hand on her leg.
Perception is the key which unlocks the intangible power of the spirit. You perceive nothing.
Down the ground, with the pants down. She's screaming to her lungs to question. Does she really mean it? Does she really mean it? Does she really mean it? And this is his law.
Well, it's just amazing how those lyrics stand up and how relevant they still are today, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. Like, yeah, I mean, like, you got that Brock dude from, last year, you know? And, you got all the cyberbullying. I mean, there's some out of control stuff. You know, we need hardcore more than ever right now, I think.
Yeah, I went to a Youth Brigade show the other night.
Oh yeah.
And JFA, and it stood out to me also, like how relevant their lyrics were, mm-hmm. and just JFA saying, you know, we never thought we'd actually miss Reagan.
That's funny.
Yeah, like that's just mind blowing for any kids that grew up, you know, listening to that in the '80s.
Yeah.
Grew up in the days of Reagan. I just couldn't believe how true that was.
Yeah, a lot of the bands in the '80s all hated Ronald Reagan, you know.
Yeah, of course. With good reason.
Yeah.
And
right?
You know, Ronald Reagan allowed the AIDS crisis to happen, the drug war, the Just Say No program that we were force-fed as kids.
Yeah.
You know, was a mess, and the crack epidemic wreaked havoc on D.C. and, you know, cities across the nation.
Yeah.
It's selling arms for hostages, lying to the people about it, and, you know.
Oh, I remember it well.
and continuing this fight against communism that we, you know, spent all this blood and money for, and nothing came of it, you know.
Yeah.
I have my problems with Reagan, but nowhere near what's going on today.
Yeah, I know. I know. At least
I felt like he was actually on our side.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, man. I don't watch the news anymore. And like I say, I'm not on Facebook that much because I can't take watching it anymore. I'm just like, enough. Just enough.
Yeah, it's horrible. A lot of us just can't, you know, you sit there dumbfounded. You can't believe this is happening.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't believe that our president sides with Russia instead of with America. That's weird.
Yeah.
Again, especially growing up during the 80s.
Yeah, yeah, it's. Which weren't that long ago, you know?
No, I mean, not long enough that people should be able to remember.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, we go through cycles, and hopefully we'll all vote the current administration out, and, I don't know, half of Congress, most of Congress, I don't know.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I mean, I hope it's before any really irreparable damage is done.
Yeah.
But I don't like the idea of, you know, rapists sitting on the Supreme Court.
Well, yeah.
And I was just watching on TV, they were showing the Clarence Thomas hearings.
Yeah.
And I was reminded again, like, just how horrible that guy was.
And that
he was a sexual predator.
Yeah.
And so, you know, how do we wind up with all these sexual predators with lifetime appointments on the most important court in the land? And then, you know, there's another sexual predator in the White House.
Yeah.
Got 20 women accusing him of, you know, sexual assault.
Oh, you know, it's the whole power thing.
It is, but it's fucked up.
Oh, I agree. It's totally fucked up.
And it's funny, you know, like hardcore and skating and some of that was just seen as being, you know, rebellious or I don't know, anti-American or any of this stuff. Like, it was cracked down on, and it was badly looked upon during that time. You know,
I got state spots, you know, like, it's funny, like, you know, like where I was living, you know, we could only street skate, but Metro, the Vienna Metro was right there. So, I mean, you know, I'd be in DC a lot of weekends, you know, skating like the welfare banks and when, you know, the Malcolm X, fountain. I don't know if you know where that is. It's like a multi-tiered fountain, but the bottom one in the winter, when it's empty, you can skate it. I remember getting kicked out of those places all the time, especially welfare banks. Like, you maybe get one run in and security was out yelling at you.
Yeah. But I mean, you guys were writing conscious lyrics, you know, and playing this, protesting this kind of stuff. And, you know, you're the ones who come out on the right side historically in the end.
I guess. I don't know. It's, you know, like I say, like, that was, you know, those were Mark's lyrics. I totally back them. I'm not, you know, trying to down it or anything. You know, we didn't always write either, you know, and.
Well, I'm not just talking about Lugman. I mean, I'm talking about hardcore music.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And how, you know, hardcore was kind of a music of the people.
Yeah, well, it's like anything, you know. People used to think, you know, Little Richard was the devil, you know. And he wasn't. He was just saying, I'm right here. What are you going to do about it? You know what I mean?
And again, like, that he pushed forward the civil rights movement and was on the forefront of the LGBTQ movement.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, whether it's hardcore punk, regular rock, whatever, that's it, you know, that's what makes it what it is, you know. Otherwise, we'd all be listening to Taylor Swift, you know. And thank God we're not.
Yeah, I like a couple of Taylor Swift songs. I didn't. My daughter's 4, so, you know.
Yeah, mine's 8, so I do get it.
We gotta dance around to that stuff occasionally. When you got daughters, you know?
Yeah, you do. You do.
But at least she knows how to play a guitar and writes her own songs.
Yeah. And she is, you know, she's a young woman in a very nasty industry. So, and she's, you know, kicking ass and taking names.
Yeah. So at least there's that.
Yeah.
In terms of your, you called it a nasty industry. I mean, did you have any experiences, like, industry-wise of trying to take Lugnut to the next level?
No. I mean, I don't know, man. We just did our own thing, and we always just did it ourselves, total DIY. You know, it was nice when Bill started his label and wanted to put us out for us. But, I mean, like, we didn't. No, not really. You know, I think we sent something to Discord. Like, yeah, we're not looking for anybody right now. Thanks for your interest. And that was that, you know. But
yeah, I wish that, you know, I was talking to somebody just this weekend doing an interview, and we were talking about that we wish that Reston had a record label, you know, had had a label to sort of, like, rival Discord. And had a label that, you know, could have at least tried to put these bands forward. And let them make a name for themselves on that, because, you know, maybe that could have changed the course of Northern Virginia music.
It could have. I have some problems with Discord, just as far as everybody else in the free world thinking that BC was Discord and it wasn't, you know, but everybody thinks it was. Like, I always remember, like, when we played in Richmond, we got better, reception, you know, because Richmond was totally different, you know.
That's why Avail went to Richmond.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Richmond was great at that time because they had so many great bands, and they were bands that weren't trying to be Fugazi, you know? And not to down Fugazi, I like Fugazi, but it seemed like a lot of people were doing the whole Fugazi thing, and I'm like, just let Fugazi do it and come up with something yourself, you know? And Richmond had that, you know? They had a band like Avail, and they had Guar, and they had Hose Got Cable, one of my favorite all-time Richmond bands. They had that band Inertia that Bill put a 7-inch out for. They just had all kinds of stuff going on down there.
Yeah, and you had a lot of people went to VCU to pursue like arts.
Yeah,
there, because they had a really great art program.
Yeah. Yeah, Richmond was a good town at that time. I don't know how it is now, but...
And it was cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where did you play when you went there? You played Twisters?
Yeah, we played Twisters. We played Metro twice. That's all I can recall off the top of my head.
those are two classic Richmond clubs.
And you know what's funny? And, you know, I'm surprised neither Bill or Charlie said this to you, but I saw Ugly open for Neurosis at Twisters. If you can believe that, Bill.
Oh, wow. That's weird.
Yeah. Like, Ugly. And then, you know, Neurosis is the headliner. It was... Great show, you know. My friends get to play with Neurosis. I was a little jealous.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So, what eventually became of Lugnut?
Well, we just kind of broke up. We had gotten our third drummer, Barney, who was this absolute phenomenal drummer. I'm still friends with him. And we brought him into the band, and he brought a totally different dynamic. And then really towards the end, we started bringing this other guy, Mike, in. He played sax. And some of us kind of wanted to go in this kind of direction where we weren't just a hardcore band, and we wanted to branch out, you know, and start exploring different things, and some people didn't, and we recorded the last, what, you know, would have been our CD for Bill, and, you know, we were all just kind of like, I don't know, I think we're kind of done here. So.
You recorded stuff with Barney and with a sax player?
We didn't have a sax player. But we recorded, I don't know, 9 songs with Barney. Our second 7-inch Barney played on.
You'll have to send me all that stuff.
I think 2 of those songs might be what I sent you. Polaroid Picture of God, I think I sent you. Another song, Prevail.
Prevail?
Yeah, those were with Barney.
Those sound really, really professional.
Yeah, that was our buddy Jeff Giuliano recorded those. and sorry about the lawnmowers. Those two songs actually were recorded in a house, his buddy, Jeff Giuliano's buddy's house, and they just turned out amazing. And then when we went to go record the rest of it, Jeff was going to bring us into Omega Studios, which was in Falls Church.
Mm-hmm.
And HR recorded there. And we got there, we set up. That's like a real studio. The place looks like the Starship Enterprise, you know? And... like, I think we started tracking one song and we all looked at each other like, this sounds horrible. You know, it doesn't sound anything like us. And we were like, dude, Jeff, I know you pulled some strings to get us in here and all, but this doesn't sound like us. And he was like, no, totally cool. And a couple weeks later, he had found us a little studio in Maryland, in Bethesda, I think. And we finished, doing all that material there and had a blast. It sounded great. I had those files at one point and now I don't, and I'm kicking myself for it.
Well, I'll see if Barney maybe has them.
He might. I don't know.
I'll check with him. He was going to come on at one point and I don't know what happened, but.
Yeah. I talked to him, couple days ago. I sent him a message saying, hey, I'm gonna talk to Andy if that's okay, and he was like, yeah, no, that's cool. I had some things, so yeah.
He's gone on to have quite the drum and bass career.
Yeah, man, I dig what he's doing. You know, and that kinda gets back to like what I was saying before, that we all started wanting to branch out, you know, because he started doing the Chuck Street Players, like, not very long after Lugnut, you know. So he started going into the DJ thing.
Yeah, that's what I was more familiar with Barney doing.
Yeah.
With all those guys.
Yeah.
Hugo and Nate and all those dudes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so he does great, man. I'm proud of him.
that this is the first mention of the Chuck Street Players.
Yeah. you gotta interview them, man.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would like to do that. I would like to do that. That's funny that you brought them up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, shit, after that, I completely unplugged and I didn't, I mean, I think me and Mark jammed with Bill a little bit after that, but nothing came of it. And I totally unplugged after that and just played acoustic for like 10 years, like just by myself, you know.
And actually recorded?
Just at home. I didn't do anything with it. I was kind of done with any kind of scene, you know, at that point, because, I don't know, man, you put in a ton of work to write songs and record them, and then you do a ton of work to advertise for shows, and then you play shows and, like, 20 people show up, and you're like, I don't know, me personally, I started getting to be like, I love playing with these guys, but I'm just as happy in a basement as I am on a stage with them. You know?
Well, the last song on Curb Stomp kind of alludes to that.
What do you mean?
A little bit, because there's like the acoustic opening to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, like I say, you know, we really did want to try some different stuff.
I mean, I go so far as to call it, like, really pretty.
Yeah.
Which are not words that you would regularly associate with lug nut.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no. I mean, when we would jam, like, when we were in Brian's basement and we were jamming, especially after we got Mikey on sax, like, you know, it was a totally different world. We were becoming a totally different kind of band, I thought. Yeah. But it's all good.
So let me ask you, since we're talking about, or the name of the show is Jams for Man, and you were just talking about playing for 20 people, do you remember anything about playing the actual Jam for Man show with Lug Nut?
Bits and pieces, yeah.
And, like, how many people were there and where you played and...
Well, it was at Wrestling Community Center. And, I mean, I remember those people in the crowd, you know. I don't know, man, like... I remember crowds, like sometimes we'd have a nice crowd, sometimes we didn't, most times we didn't, but that crowd's always enthusiastic, was always enthusiastic, but I felt a lot of them were really there to see the Sun Monkeys, you know, so, and we were, I don't know, we were just so, I think, different. I don't think people understood what we were trying to do, but maybe that's... But no.
Well, I mean, that's funny because, you know, the rest in hardcore scene, you got your earlier music definitely seems to fit in with that.
Yeah, but those guys were gone by then, you know? Like, I think Avail was the only band left.
Yeah, but I mean, you would have fit in well amongst, like, LDK, Hostile Environment, you know, Avail, all that stuff.
I'd like to think so. I mean, we played with Avail a couple times, you know, after, you know, when Tim started singing, after they'd moved to Richmond. Always loved watching them play. And, but yeah, like, yeah, I don't know, like, you know, the 90s came and tastes changed, you know, like bands like Jane's Addiction, you know, at the end of the 80s started getting huge, and that changed everybody. And of course the Chili Peppers changed everybody. And, you know, it might have had something to do with us too, because, you know, like I say, we kind of started thinking differently, you know, not just let's play metal and hardcore and rah, 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 you know. But, yeah, it was a good show. The Monkees were great as always. A lot of fun there. Big sound, you know, because that's a pretty big room. And they had a nice PA and everything's mic'd up. And you instantly sound better when your amps are mic'd. The half speakers, you know, and you feel the kick drum more, and yeah, you know, Jansen Man was good. And I think the only reason we actually could play it was because I think you had to have a resident address. One of your band members had to, in order to play, and we were all from Oakton, and Clay, I think, had just moved to Reston, and that's how we were able to get it. Yeah, if my memory's right.
That's cool. I mean, you know, if several of the guys from the Sun Monkees were going to Oakton, it just sort of fits. I mean, like, yeah. I said, like my band that I had a member from Oakton.
Yeah.
I mean, Oakton and Reston, particularly, like, crossing over at, like, Fox Mill.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of crossover right there at Fox Mill. And, you know, I mean, we're all doing the same stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of skaters, a lot of art, a lot of music. Yeah. Those were the best times I remember of my youth. The rest of it, I could do without, you know, hated school and the rest of that, but all the music, all the art, and especially now, you know, I'm 45 now, and I still see these people that I knew then on social media, and they're all doing the same stuff. They're all still doing it in some form or another. And that's
great. So we said Rubble and Rank. Mm-hmm. Who else? Are there any other guys from the band that are still doing music and still putting stuff out?
Well, Clay's kind of elusive. So I know he still plays, and he ended up moving to Florida, and he was in a band called Meringue down there, and they put out a couple records. I don't know what he's doing now. I don't know what Mark's doing now, the singer. I have no idea where he's at. Brian, I haven't talked to in a few years, but he put out a record. He lives in L.A., and he put out, like, a straight rock record probably in 2008 or 2009. That was called The Reckless Abandoned. That might be on iTunes. You might be able to find that on iTunes. Dave, our original guitarist with me, he is not doing music. He still goes to a ton of shows, though. But
living music.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's all that really matters, as long as you're staying close to the source.
Yeah, that's it. I can't do shows anymore because my hearing is awful. And so I quit, actually I remember the show that did me in was I went to see Soulfly with Mark at the new 9:30, and my ears, literally, I thought I was going to die, and I walked out of that show, I said, I can't do it anymore. You know, part of the reason I started playing acoustic, but yeah.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you still really have fond memories from Northern Virginia music.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like being a part of that band was a really great part of your life.
It was. I mean, and, you know, we nailed some milestones, you know, like we got to play DC Space. We got to play Old 930. We got to play Black Cat. You know, we played some iconic DC punk spots.
You got to play Jam for Man.
We got to play Jam for Man, you know, right there. It's like I can hang my hat on all of that right there. That's just good stuff.